Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is 11:08 here on a Friday night at CCO. Sports headlines real quick. Timberwolves beat the Knicks 115-104 coming out of the break. They will be in Milwaukee tomorrow night. Our coverage begins at 6:30. Wild beat the Red Wings in Detroit 3-2. Gopher men's hockey fall to Notre Dame 3-2. Gopher women's hockey wins 6-3. And in high school hockey, it was Brainerd Little Falls beating Andover 3-2 in overtime. And Edina beat Minnetonka 2-1 in regulation. So it'll be Edina trying to win their third straight girls hockey title tomorrow night at the Xcel Energy Center. And they will play Brainerd Little Falls. And the Twins made a move today. Little hot stove, if you will. Twins are in spring training down in Florida. They signed Marwin Gonzalez, 2-year, $21 million contract. He is a utility man who played for Houston a season ago. And, of course, our first spring training game Sunday at noon here on CCO, the Twins and the Red Sox. It is 11:09. One of my favorite topics. I've read so many books over the years, and some of my favorite books about space is written by this man, Robert Zimmerman, my favorite space and science writer, joining us from snowy Arizona tonight. Bob, pleasure to visit with you.
Not so snowy, Steve. I mean, it snowed this morning. It was astonishing. It's only the second time since we moved out here that I saw snow coming down and laying a blanket, literally laying a blanket on top of the cacti and mesquites. But it stopped snowing about an hour later, and within an hour after that, it was all gone. It all melted away, which is what usually happens. Well, when it the few times it snows, that's what usually happens. I brought a picture up on Behind the Black because I thought it was just so spectacular. I had to do that. You know, it's really, it was cool.
Yeah, my daughter goes to the University of Arizona, and she's been down there for 4 years now, and she is born and raised Minnesotan, so she's seen plenty of snow and cold. You're originally from the East Coast of the New York area. Right. You've seen plenty of snow and cold as well. But my daughter got a huge kick out of it, and she sent me some photos this morning. She said some of the people that are from California or southern Arizona, that this was really a big deal. Yeah. And my daughter's like, it's not that big a deal. You know, can we get on with our lives?
Well, from my perspective, it was wonderful because it was all the pretty and beauty
niceness
of snow, and it lasted about 2 hours, and then it was all gone.
Yeah.
Back to normal again. Nice, nice, comfy days, nice spring weather, you know.
Unlike
the mountains up here right now are definitely closed down. It's major snow, which is good. It brings water to the region. That's where all the water comes from, so it's a good thing. And the southern southwest has been in a drought for about 20 years, I've been told by many people. And what's happened in the last 2 years has been very, very wet, and I think maybe they're coming out of that finally. And what's happening is that a lot of places that hadn't been getting much water, much washes, had been very dry, are starting to see it, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, very interesting. You know, I wanted to get in touch with you because I saw a story from Reuters, and this goes back to February 21st. And I'll just read the story courtesy of Reuters, or at least the lead anyway. NASA warned SpaceX and Boeing Company of design and safety concerns for their competing astronaut launch systems, according to industry sources and a new government report, threatening the U.S. bid to revive its human spaceflight program later this year. We saw a quick turnabout today.
Well, okay, that article, if people go to behindtheblack.com,
sure,
my website, scroll down to February 21st, you'll see an essay I wrote about that specific Reuters column, and I basically retitled it Anti-American Forces at NASA Work to Block Manned American manned space flight. That's essentially how I rephrased it. It was a hit job, that article, a total hit job. It was also a typical example of the kind of bad news coverage that Americans don't trust anymore, because the only sources in that article were two anonymous sources, and they made a lot of statements such as there are 30 to 35 lingering technical concerns for, for SpaceX and Boeing. But then Reuters has to admit it could not verify what all those nearly three dozen items are. It was a hit job, totally a hit job. The one item they did mention in this anonymous sourced piece was that there's questions about the parachutes that SpaceX is using. Well, I've been following the NASA effort to block these private companies now for 4 years, and I've read all the safety reports and all the technical stuff, and I've never heard parachutes raised as a problem. Not only do the parachutes work wonderfully on SpaceX's Dragon cargo capsule and perfect every time, but they've done 17 tests of the parachutes they're going to use on the manned capsule, and they've all been fine. So I didn't know where that came from. It sounded to me like it's a game being played. This is a hit job. And in fact, the interesting thing about this is that it's literally helping a foreign power. NASA blocking the ability of our private companies to launch humans in space, the only ones that will benefit from that will be Roscosmos and Russia, because Russia will then have to sell, we will then have to buy tickets from us to put astronauts on a Soyuz rocket and capsule to get them to up and down ISS. And that is a far more dangerous spacecraft than anything SpaceX will fly right now. In the last 6 months, they've had two launch problems with the Soyuz rocket, one of which was on a manned flight, which was a launch abort. They had to literally, the astronauts didn't get into orbit. They literally parachuted back to ground during the launch. There was a failure. And the other thing is that they have had literally a capsule, a drill pit. Someone drilled into a capsule, sabotaged it while it was being assembled in Russia. And the Russians have still not explained that or solved how that happened, which means whoever sabotaged it before could do it again. And so NASA is going to have to buy tickets from this if it doesn't approve the American missions. And the decision today to go with the March 2nd SpaceX Dragon test flight of their manned capsule, I think, is because NASA's kind of backed into a corner. It can no longer slow walk these capsules. They have to say yes, because they're getting pressure from people like me and the press and people in politics to stop slow walking this. And the second thing is that they look like they're working for a foreign power. One of the other things that article said, Steve, is it indicated that these concerns could actually be a problem for flying tourists in space. Well, NASA has no say at all on what these companies wish to do if they want to sell tickets to tourists. Those are private missions, irrelevant of NASA, that they are indicating they wish to insert themselves to slow up tourist ticket sales indicates, again, they're working for Russia, because guess what? Russia is selling tickets for tourist flights again, and they will grab that business. So are these people working for us or NASA, or are they working for the Russian government? And that's a question I asked in my article on the 21st. I know there's a lot of people at NASA who aren't working for Russia, but I do know there's a lot of people in that bureaucracy nowadays that don't give a damn about the interests of our nation. They're much more interested in just protecting their bureaucracy and their jobs, and they don't care if NASA or the United States accomplishes anything. And they would willingly let astronauts die on a Soyuz. In fact, they'd prefer it. Because if an accident happens on a Soyuz, they can wash their hands and say, well, it wasn't our fault. But if it happens on an American spacecraft, well, then they could get the blame, and they'd rather cover their behinds. And so it's pretty disgraceful that NASA approved it today indicates to me once again that they have been backed into a corner. They can't delay it anymore. And so this flight will go forward on the 2nd of March. It will be a mission to ISS of an unmanned manned capsule. They will be testing its ability to dock directly with the station. The cargo crafts don't dock. They approach stay in rendezvous, and the robot arm grabs them and births them. But this, the man capsule is going to do a direct docking, and so that'll be one of the tests of this mission. I'm totally confident that SpaceX's Dragon capsule is going to be able to handle this quite well. That company, you know, like any new rocket system, it's rocket science, things go wrong. But since their last failure, they've done 41 launches in a row successfully, including landing and reusing first stages now, two different first stages three times. That's pretty remarkable. This was something that everyone said was impossible, and yet they've done it three times now, which essentially means that they're not building new first stages really much anymore. They don't have to. They just keep reflying the ones they've built. That's one of the reasons they've completely taken over the launch market, because they can save so much money this way. So anyway, that was a hit piece. It's pretty vile, and it's part of, I mean, I've been on your show before. I'm pretty disgusted with the bureaucracies at NASA and within the government. And I wonder where our so-called Make America Great president is in this. Since these actions to slow walk the American capsules are actually helping Russia, I would think Trump would want to move in and say, hey, stop slow walking it, which maybe is why that the decision today came down. Maybe someone put pressure on NASA to say, all right, enough of this silliness.
Yeah, and it was so interesting, and I got a hold of you right away when all of this played out, because I was thinking this is exactly what you were talking about, is that NASA would like to see this not happen as quickly, and because they have their own program, so to speak, on the drawing board, and they're trying to get things done. And if Boeing and SpaceX say, we're ready to fly, let us fly, we want to test these systems, We want to get American astronauts into space on American craft. Let's do it in 2019.
They don't look so good. Yeah, the SLS Orion, a rocket and capsule. NASA's been building it since essentially 2004. They're going to spend maybe $60 billion before they put their first manned launch up in 2024 at the earliest. And it will be a problem for them politically if by the time they finally launch a manned mission, private companies have been doing it for years cheaply and successfully and actually expanding that capability over time. It would make NASA look very bad. So one of the reasons they've been slow walking it, and a lot of my readers who have ties in NASA say, oh, no, it's not to help the Russians. It's to maybe so space SLS and Orion don't look so bad. And that might be true, but it doesn't change the fact that these actions are helping a foreign power. And that is disgraceful. And when you weigh the balance, you should not be doing things that hurt Americans and favor a foreign power, even for any reason. And so that's my take on this. That launch will go up. I'm very confident it'll do well. I mean, obviously, it's a test mission, but based on everything I've seen, there ain't no real reason for it to be a serious problem. I expect NASA to find things. That's what I expect. They have been trying to find things for several years now, and I expect them to try to find things. What SpaceX will do after that mission, if it all goes well, the capsule will return to Earth. They will refurbish the capsule, check it out, make sure everything's okay. That'll be part of the test. And then they will refurbish it, and they're going to use it in a launch abort test, which is a test of the Falcon 9 and the Dragon capsule's capability of separating during launch if something goes wrong with the rocket, so that the crew on board can be safely taken away from the rocket and land safely far away. And that launch abort is supposed to happen about 3 months or less after this test flight, and then they're going to follow that up with the first manned mission. That's the plan.
And Boeing hopes to accomplish those similar tasks here in 2019 as well.
Yes, Boeing has tentatively its unmanned test mission for April. That's a little more tentative. They want to follow up with the manned mission in August. They are a little bit more tentative. They did have an issue last year where they were doing an engine test of the thrusters on the capsule, and they had major leaks in those valves. So they've had to redesign the valves, and they're going to have to test those valves again to make sure they're okay. And I haven't heard whether they've actually done that. So that has to happen. But you know what? Once again, in an old-fashioned NASA world, American world, that wouldn't take years. that would happen very quick. I'll give you an example. I had a post on Behind the Black today because NASA made a big deal about an announcement today that they have finally scheduled the Orion SLS launch abort test. This is similar to what I mentioned with SpaceX. This is going to test Orion's ability to and the escape tower above Orion to see if that's going to work. So this won't be a launch of the SLS rocket, but it'll be a test of the launch abort system with Orion. Well, they did their first launch abort test with Orion in 2010, and they've now scheduled the second one for June of 2019. That's 9 years between tests.
Mm.
I want that to sink in. 9 years between the first and second launch abort tests. As I say and said, I'm Behind the Black. We fought and won World War II in about a third that time. We won the Civil War in about half that time. And in fact, SpaceX took less time to conceive, design, build, and launch the Falcon Heavy. Any project that takes that long to accomplish something like this is a fraud. It indicates that the goal of SLS and Orion is not to build or fly a manned capsule, but it's to suck money from the American taxpayer for as long as possible to stretch it out. Because during those 9 years, they were getting $3 to $5 billion a year to build this system, and they weren't doing anything. And so that just contrasts between the two. I could go on. I rave about this all the time. It's really infuriating.
Quick break. We'll come back. More with Robert Zimmerman. His website, Behind the Black. He's written many wonderful books over the years. One of my favorites, Genesis, The Story of Apollo 8, available for purchase at his website. And I just finished Pioneer, a book he wrote many years ago and is a fun read. Science fiction fans will certainly enjoy Pioneer. We have much more with Robert, including a chat about... What's going on with potential lunar missions and how there's talk about bringing in private companies like SpaceX and Boeing and others to do another lunar landing. We'll get Bob's thoughts on that coming up. 10:29 here at CCO. Weather on the way. Snow overnight. Winds pick up over the weekend. Areas south of the heart of the Twin Cities area, southern counties of the Twin Cities area, in a blizzard warning. Once again, snow and wind, even some freezing drizzle. We'll have more on that coming up in a little bit. We continue with my favorite space and science writer, Robert Zimmerman, his website, Behind the Black. And Robert, I brought up the books, but you've been doing the website for a while right now, and you're trying to keep things going.
Every February I do what I call my birthday month fundraising drive. So people who check Behind the Black on a regular basis would see I'm begging for donations and subscriptions at the moment. And I've been very surprised at how much response I'm getting from the readership. And it's one of the reasons I can say what I say. I'm not beholden to anybody. I have actually had experience, more than enough experience, in the D.C. area and within the magazine world where people don't like my opinions and try to squelch them. And they can't do that with my website. The people who read it are the ones who support it, and that's why I'm free to say anything I want. And I think that allows me to be really much more objective about what I'm seeing in the industry. A lot of journalists get very buddy-buddy with the I'm sorry to say this, get very, very buddy with the bureaucracy in D.C. and don't want to say bad things about it. And when it's bad, I'm going to say so. When it's good, I'm going to say it's good. I mean, we could talk about the planetary missions that NASA runs.
Oh,
they're spectacular. And I'm not afraid to do that. I regularly report on that kind of stuff. I post images from Mars Reconnaissance Orbit on a regular basis that I dig up out of their archives because they're just spectacular, and they've done a very good job on their planetary work.
Yeah, just absolutely amazing what they've been able to do on Mars and the images, and it certainly captured my imagination. One thing I wanted to bring up and get your thoughts on, and this is along the lines of the public-private partnership, and this gets back to getting back to the moon and getting boots on the moon, so to speak. Are you surprised by this development? It's like, hey, we want your ideas. We want you involved to help us get back there because it seems to be a goal again to return to the moon. And I have a sense it has to do with the Chinese would like to put boots on the moon as well.
There's there's a whole, I call it the new colonial movement. The whole world is pushing towards space, so there's a great building competition between nations to do this. As for the private-public partnership, oh, I love that term, and I'm being sarcastic. That is a bureaucratic government term that they came up with to try to equalize themselves, say there's some kind of equality between the public and the private sectors. And the truth of the matter is, under our government, the government is supposed to be the servant to the people, not a partnership, a servant. And so what's happening, though, what is happening is that NASA and the government has been transitioning very slowly, because there's resistance within the bureaucracy to this, to shifting to being the boss over the private sector when it comes to space, to becoming a customer for private companies. That's the revolution that SpaceX and Northrop Grumman, or Orbital Lake Tucares, used to be called, did with their cargo crafts. NASA didn't design any of it, doesn't own any of it. They buy the service from these private companies. So they are the servant, essentially. What happens is that Americans want to build these things, and they're providing a way to make that happen. And so what's happening with the planetary probe world is that success by the private sector with capsules and cargo ships and rockets, getting things done very cheaply, very fast, has begun to win supporters within the bureaucracy. They can't get everything they want right away, but what they're doing now is NASA is asking private companies to provide them the spacecraft to go and land on the moon. And NASA is only going to put its instruments, science instruments, on those spacecraft. So it's a slightly different approach. Now, that's going to continue to change, and in that direction towards private sector domination. And one of the ways that's going to demonstrate that right this second, at this moment, is a privately funded and built lunar probe lander that is right now in space, that was launched this week by SpaceX as a secondary payload on one of their commercial launches. It's called Bereshit. That's a Hebrew word, and it was built by an Israeli nonprofit. They got donations. They're not in it for the profit. They're there to sell and inspire their people. That's what the idea of the nonprofit is. But of course, it's developing technologies within Israel that can be then sold later on. And that probe is now in Earth orbit, and over the next 2 months, it's going to slowly expand that orbit till it reaches the moon. And then when it reaches the moon, it's going to land in mid-April on the moon as a lander, do some science, and work for 2 days on the moon. And this is, once again, it's a demonstration project to show that private money can make this happen. There are other missions as well. Many of them were finalists, including this Israeli company, in the Google Lunar X Prize. And no one won that because they ran out of time. But the companies that were finalists in that are all saying they're moving forward anyway. And several of them have launches scheduled, one of which is Moon Express. They were for a long time the favorite in the Lunar X Prize, but the problem is they signed up with Rocket Lab as their rocket, and the Rocket Lab has been a success. It just wasn't a success fast enough, so they didn't get to launch. Their launch is now scheduled for later this year or early next year, and once that probably this year. And once it goes, they will also be a private lunar lander, maybe rover as well, on the moon. And that just is what NASA wants to tie into right now. It wants to hire private companies, and that's the future. That's what will make America dominant in the world, dominant in the solar system, because we will have many private companies competing to do things efficiently and fast. And that's, I hope, the future. It's just a question of it's a turf war, whether the bureaucracies that have controlled this turf for decades will be willing to give it up. And one of the ways to make them give it up is that the American people put pressure on the government to make them do so.
Quick break. We have more with Robert Zimmerman, my favorite space and science writer's website, Behind the Black. We'll talk more about the moon and some other things going on out there, including some exciting photos that he has posted on his website. And I want to make sure that I get this right. Ultima Thule, new high-resolution images from New Horizons. And that was a flyby in January of 2019. So we'll get Robert's thoughts on that and explanation about that as well. And then I'll also maybe get into the money to be made potentially on the moon and mining these asteroids. There could be big, big dollars out there. We'll have the weather in a moment. 11:43, Robert Zimmerman, my favorite space and science writer, joining us. His website, Behind the Black, and I'll apologize right up front to Robert Zimmerman and to everyone. The object I speak of is not an asteroid, technically. It's part of the solar system. Tell us a little bit about Ultima Thule. There was a posting on your website, a really cool image. This exists way out there.
Yes, way out there. This is what they call a Kuiper Belt
object.
You know, the term asteroids used to apply to anything that was really small out there, and it could still apply to this.
Sure.
So scientists will dispute that, but it's a good term. What it is, though, it's a specific object in a belt of objects that they have posited exists beyond the orbit of Pluto, or maybe the orbit of Pluto, since they consider Pluto and its moon Charon to be also Kuiper Belt objects, though they're planets, I will say that. But that's another issue. Ultima Thule, I've also seen it pronounced that way, but you're not wrong. This is it's a questionable definition of pronunciation in any case. But Ultima Thule that was a nickname that the New Horizons team gave it. This is after they passed Pluto and took those spectacular pictures, the spacecraft was still operational and it was moving out into the Kuiper Belt. And they used the Hubble Space Telescope and a lot of other instruments to locate an asteroid, a Kuiper Belt object that they could possibly fly by as well.
Hmm.
I didn't think they were going to find anything. The odds of that seemed so impossible.
Sure.
They did. And it's even more incredible if they were able to get to it and actually have enough precision on the spacecraft to get pictures, because this thing's moving very fast. New Horizons is the fastest thing we've ever flown. And on top of that, it's a very tiny object, and we're talking about gigantic distances. And it's going to be flying by in a very short period of time, less than 20 minutes, half hour. And so they got some good pictures. The downloads from the spacecraft are slow. They prioritize what they want to get, but they released one or two images right away, and they've been slowly trickling down. And so today they released another one, which I put the highest resolution one maybe we'll ever get. It's an incredible image. If you look at it, this thing, initially it looks like a snowman. That's what they first said.
Mm.
But we now know that is not true. It's the nature of how we looked at it. If you look at the picture, it looks like two lobes or balls attached together, one smaller than the other. But the bigger ball is not a ball. It's flattened. We happen to be looking at it from the side. They got additional images that showed with the rotation of Ultima Thule that the bigger of the two lobes is actually flattened, while the smaller one is kind of roundish. Now, this is a strange object. This is an object that these two pieces kind of like floated to gently merge with each other. They didn't, no impact, no crash. They just slowly dropped into each other's arms, you might say. And this is, we're looking at things that are alien, because this is far out in the solar system. There's not a lot of energy. There's not a lot of gravity. Objects are far apart. For them to even coalesce is not going to be easy. And once they do coalesce, there's not going to be much else to add to them. So this object is very old as well. It's from the earliest part of the solar system. It's alien. We don't really know a lot about it. The pictures are great, but what we're looking at is a lot of unknowns. We don't know its density. There's no way to get that information from the flyby. It was just too quick and fast. So we don't know how its mass or its density. You know, we just don't know a lot. We can just look at this and say, oh, that's strange. They will be able to get some spectroscopy and for the materials with time, and that'll tell us a lot. But we're looking at alien things, and it fits the thing I've said many times, Steve, on Behind the Black, on your show and elsewhere, that on every mission to another planet and another object, every single time the objects we look at are totally unique. Every single time. There's only one case I can think of where the two objects on two different missions look kind of similar, and that was Hayabusa 2 going to Ryuga recently, and OSIRIS-REx going to Bennu. Both of those asteroids looked actually somewhat similar. They were rubble piles, but they're still not the same. They are different. And every object out there so far has been unique, and that's pretty amazing.
We only have a couple of minutes left in our time tonight. The hour goes all too quickly. But I want to get your thoughts on this. And I read something somewhere about the money to be made on potentially mining the moon or asteroids. And you wrote about that in your book many years ago, Pioneer, that I finished not that long ago. About the idea that, you know, mining operations could be wildly profitable. What about that?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of people who've tried to sell the idea that mining operations will be wildly profitable. And eventually, I think, yes, of course, it's like the United States. Eventually, there's going to be big money to be made with the resources in these asteroids and on the moon and elsewhere. But a lot of that value is possibly only going to be sellable to other colonists when they're up there. However, that doesn't mean there isn't profits to be made. Resources, the most important resource that's probably in space is energy, access to the sun much more efficiently, and then getting it back to Earth. And that's the technology I think will be developed. There are minerals that you know, they can develop things that will make that we will be able to use on Earth eventually. The big thing, though, is sooner or later, the real money will be providing the resources to the colonists in space. And that's really where the big money is. Now, there's a lot of talk about helium-3 on the moon as a resource for energy purposes, producing nuclear fuel, and that I don't dispute that. We'll have to see when it comes. It's down the road. The money to be made in space is not necessarily mining at this stage. It's mostly research and tourism are the two main things. And once those start happening, then you'll have to supply those people, and that's where the money will be made.
Well, exciting times. 1 week from tomorrow, it'll be Saturday, March 2nd, that test launch for SpaceX. We'll keep our fingers crossed that all goes according to plan.
Yes, Steve. It's good. It's a lot of things are happening right now. You've got these asteroid missions. You've got the manned missions. It is definitely a very exciting time.
Always a pleasure. Thanks so much, Bob.
All right, Sam. Bye-bye.
All right, there he is, Robert Zimmerman, my favorite space and science writer. His website, Behind the Black, he's written many wonderful books. Genesis, the Story of Apollo 8. And I just finished Pioneer, a book he wrote many years ago. If you're a science fiction fan, I think you would enjoy it a great deal. 10 minutes now in front of midnight. We'll come back, have the headlines from the day in sports. We'll have more on the weather. All the news coming up at midnight. 6 minutes now in front of midnight here at CCO. I'm really excited about that. That is going to be a big milestone. If all goes well and the weather cooperates, once again, March 2nd, from Bob's website, NASA has finally approved SpaceX unmanned test flight on March 2nd. That is a week from tomorrow. They completed the last flight readiness review today, Friday, and the press conference revealing this decision was made. And here we go. SpaceX and their Falcon 9 rocket. They'll have the human-rated Dragon capsule, and they'll launch, and hopefully everything checks out. And then they have one more big test, and that is the launch abort test. And then astronauts could be flying later this year. And that's great stuff. Just has always amazed me. Great, great deal. So we'll see. And then, of course, Boeing right on their heels as well to do the same thing. Similar in some ways, different in some ways, but I think the capsules will look pretty familiar. They haven't strayed too far from what they were doing ultimately in Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo, the mission that ultimately put Americans on the moon. It is 5 minutes now in front of midnight here at CCO. Let's get you up to date on that weather again. The Lennox Premier Dealer Storm Center. Right now, what I want to do is take a look at that radar. And snow is gradually creeping into the Twin Cities area from the south. Earlier this evening, it was really along that I-90 corridor, and now we're seeing a large area move into the Mankato area, up toward New Ulm and out toward Marshall, and that's gradually moving toward the Twin Cities area. So snow overnight. The big story is going to be the wind once again, and if you look at the map of the state, to give you an idea of where we're going to see really the most dangerous conditions and that blizzard warning going into effect tomorrow night and continuing until Sunday evening. It is the southern counties of the Twin Cities metro area, Dakota, Scott, Carver counties. And it's really the rural areas in those counties where the winds are really going to whip through and create visibility problems. And this extends all the way out to Wilmer and Montevideo and the South Dakota line, down to Marshall, Worthington, we're talking, Jackson, Blue Earth, Albert Lea, and then up 35 again to the cities. This includes Mankato and New Ulm, St. Peter. So that gives you an idea of the area of the blizzard warning tomorrow night into Sunday, and the winds are going to be howling at 40 to 45 miles an hour, and there's a lot of snow, and we're going to see blowing and drifting for sure in these parts. Bitterly cold temps to follow as well. So the recipe for that blizzard warning certainly exists. 26 now, east winds at 9 miles an hour. We'll have all the news at midnight. I will get an update from spring training. The new Twins beat writer for the Pioneer Press, Betsy Helfand, will join us, talk about the latest signing, and much, much more here on the CCO.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.